Hey, welcome, Carm Capriotto with Remarkable Results Radio, episode 456. Hey, are you aware that the lion's share of small businesses must have required harassment training for their employees? Well, attorney Jennifer Grady is here to help us understand more. In this episode, you have a chance to be personally updated on harassment training and the change in the law that requires training if you have five or more employees. This and more humbling facts that will bring prudence for you on important HR responsibilities.
In my own experience, I have never even been to trial because we always settle our cases. And so in some ways, the fact that someone brings a case at all, you already lose, even if it didn't happen or you're innocent, just because you have to pay to get out of it. And you're probably going to have to pay something to settle the case.
Welcome, aftermarketers, to Remarkable Results Radio. Listen to learn just one thing from today's episode on your journey to remarkable results. Hi, friends. Carm Capriotto, the Aftermarket Podcast Guy here. Hey, I want to thank Apex for the support of the podcast and for helping keep the lights on for the Aftermarket's premier podcast. Hey, are you booked to Apex yet? Did you know that some of the very best shop owner and technician training takes place at Apex? Well, as a bonus, this year I'll be moderating a panel titled Aftermarket 2030, Consolidation Trends, Opportunities, and Challenges for the Independent Service Professional. This discussion will help you plan important moves for your business. Hey, if you've been to Apex, you know it's the place to go if you earn your living in the aftermarket. I hope to see you there November 5th through the 7th, 2019. Go to aapexshow.com to register and learn more. Hey, subscribe and join our ecosystem for free. Discover some of the hottest topics and content you'll find in the aftermarket's digital realm, and it's only here on the Premier Automotive Aftermarket Podcast. Go to remarkableresults.biz/listen, and everything's there for you. Hey, by the way, find the talking points with Jennifer Grady at remarkableresults.biz/E456. Now, Jennifer Grady, Esquire, is an attorney, corporate trainer, and international speaker. Ms. Grady founded the law firm of The Grady Firm, PC, in 2012, with a passion for helping business owners, entrepreneurs, and their families achieve the American dream of freedom, opportunity, self-sufficiency, and success. The Grady Firm has offices in Beverly Hills and San Diego, California, and serves clients remotely from across the globe. As a very interesting side note, Jennifer Grady's parents are in the industry and are members of a 20 group, and she's spoken to aftermarket industry events to help bring awareness and compliance to human resource issues. This episode helps you understand the serious issues of sexual harassment in the workplace and never discount the fact that your business is resistant to a harassment claim. You know, we rarely talk about this topic in its time. I want to thank Jennifer Grady for her very candid overview and willingness to help our aftermarket professionals. As you listen, learn how you can improve your position or understand what you need to do to implement strong policy in your company so you can minimize your exposure and also be compliant to the letter of the law. Jennifer Grady brings some staggering statistics to bear that exemplify the real problem and heightens your risk if you don't manage harassment and your exposure if not handled properly. Hey, a warm welcome to Jennifer A. Grady, Esquire. Hello, Jennifer.
Hi, nice to be here.
Oh, I'm glad you're here. She's from the Grady Firm, PC, in Beverly Hills, California. Carm, what are you doing bringing on an attorney from Beverly Hills, California?
Bringing some sun to you in Buffalo.
Yeah, thank you very much. Jennifer's parents are in the business. They're in our business. And they lead a 20 group at ATI, right?
Yes, they do. Yeah, for quite a few years now.
Cool. And you've spoken at some ATI events?
I have. I've spoken to about 320 group events on different employment law matters. And I've also done a podcast for ATI with George Zeeks as well.
Very good. Well, you know, and you've also appeared on Business Rockstars and Entrepreneurs Podcast Network, and you've been a panelist, a presenter on many private events around the country. So you obviously are a sought-after person. Glad we have you. You know, HR law, human resources is such a big challenge for us, and I'm going to go on record to say I'm sure there's an awful lot of service professional business owners that went from being a technician to a service advisor, and now they're CEO of their business. What kind of immersion have they had in law and the requirements that each and every state and the federal government requires that we have to play nice, behave, do the right things, protect our people, because the laws, the government's our partner, and we have to be aware of these laws. I think there's one state in the entire United States of ours that has the most laws on the books, and that may be your state in California. Am I right?
I am pretty sure. We are the most left geographically, and you could say also politically as well. But on the one hand, we do have a lot of laws that look out for its people, but that does make it a lot more challenging for business owners since there is so much to keep up with. And I know there is no central repository for all of these laws. And my clients are out there doing what they do best and just trying to run a business and keep it together. So I consider it my job to be on every mailing list there is and constantly be compiling updates to the law and letting them know what that is.
Full time and a half job. I mean, do you have like somebody in the business doing that for you?
I personally look at it myself, and then I do have my staff as well, and then we're always crafting blogs. And for the listeners out there, we did publish one today about requirements in every state in the U.S., since about half the states now do have requirements about harassment training, and others have recommendations. So I wanted to be cognizant of those listeners in all parts of the country so they can find out what they need to do.
Here it is that we're talking human resource law. There's a lot to talk about for hiring and firing, but even more important is this, the whole sexual harassment piece.
Yes, and so that has been going on for as long as humans have been around, but it's more in the news, at least in the last 2 years, obviously since the Harvey Weinstein scandal and other celebrities like Matt Lauer, Bill Cosby, several presidents, it's out there. And so people have finally started to take a stand against it. And there are still obviously cases going on that are shocking and surprising that we're still doing that, but we can also see some measurable improvement in the last decade. So what my job is to educate and teach people what to look out for, how to prevent it. It's not only expensive and costly for the employers, but it does cause harm to the employees and to the morale of the company as well.
So what is really sexual harassment?
Sexual harassment is any unwelcome sexual advance that's either verbal or physical that takes place in the workplace. And so that isn't only confined to within the four walls of your shop. That can include when you're driving home a customer, if you're at a Christmas party, if you're doing something nearby. So that's really what that covers. And it covers not only your own employees, but anyone who's stepping foot. So if you have a delivery person constantly asking out your receptionist, or you're harassing someone at the gas station across the street, all of those things would fall under sexual harassment. And it's illegal both under federal law and under your state law as well.
Did it take the celebrities to really bring this mainstream, or has there really been a lot of work done on this by firms like you that are going out and telling their clients, hey, listen, you need to rethink this, and we need to start doing training, not only for you, the management, but for your people?
So I've personally been doing this training since 2014. It has been required in California, but in the last year or so, it's now trickled down to anybody with five or more employees must do this training, and now they have to do it.
Let's time out for 1 minute. I think it's so critical. If you've got five employees and you sign five checks each and every week, this applies to you, Mr. Shop Professional.
So that would be the biggest difference for me as a practitioner, because a year ago or so, it was 50 or more employees. So only my big clients were having me come in and doing the training. And now with five or more, yes, that is most people in California, unless you're a very tiny shop. So we have to go out and train everybody by the end of the year. So I know there will be a big rush in December. So I do encourage people, if you are in a state that has that requirement, that you look into it now, either if your state has any, sometimes have free webinars, or you can look at other HR organizations that have webinars you can pay for, or you can hire someone like myself to come to your site and do the on-site training. And the benefit of that is that I find people do pay attention if you're calling their name and interacting and engaging and doing. I do an experiential kind of hands-on role play with the managers, since mostly that's the first time they've ever had any exposure to this type of thing, and they don't know what to do and they don't know how to handle it. And so sometimes we have to give companies the benefit of the doubt that they just don't know. So my goal is also to help them issue spot and figure out when they have a problem and when they do need to seek professional help to guide through this sort of situation.
Do I get a piece of paper that says I went through this so that I could posted or proved to the whoever the government sexual harassment police would be, or if I ever get called on the carpet and go to the EEOC, they're probably going to want to ask me, have you had sexual harassment training or harassment training in your company, and you can't provide this quote-unquote document. Is there such a thing as a document?
There is. So when we do the training, we provide a certificate to the individual that the HR person or whoever's supervising will sign. And then we also have sign-in sheets. I also create an anti-harassment policy that they would sign, and we put that in their file and keep that on record. And so there could possibly be an audit, and that's what you'll use these for. And then if there is litigation, part of it is to show that the company did whatever they can do to prevent this. And so that would be part of your evidence there.
Let's go back to the handbook. I would assume that any company that has a handbook, and if it was created by an HR company or a consultant, there's going to be a harassment policy inside.
There is, but I always have a standalone policy. So that's outside of the handbook, and I have people sign it while they're waiting, while we're checking in for the training. It's about 4 pages, so it is more in-depth than a paragraph or two in the handbook. So you can have it in both places, but I do recommend a standalone, and we are actually required in California to have that. And I think a lot of people might not know about that.
Orientation, bringing on a brand new employee. If that sexual harassment policy is standalone, there's got to be a signature page that they've read it, that they understand it. But is it also a very, very good practice that whoever is in charge of that onboarding, that they spend the time and go over it paragraph by paragraph?
I would recommend that. I mean, we don't want people just having these documents, putting their name on it, never reading them. That's defeating the purpose, because they're not getting the benefit of what you're trying to teach them, and they're not really learning. So I do recommend when you do the onboarding that you go through them. I know myself, I've done it for employees. It can take about an hour or two to go through all this documentation. I even go through handbooks so that we make sure everything's out in the open and they're not just throwing that handbook in the back of the car. But in terms of scanning it, I do recommend that you scan the entire document, not just the signature page, because then we don't know what it goes to.
So the signature page that new employee, and in fact, every current employee knows that this policy exists, understands that they sign it, it's in the folder. So there's one level of not only protection, but making sure that there's no breach of the policy in the company. And you said something so important just a few minutes ago about a delivery person brings a part, a salesman comes by, someone who comes in and wants to sell you something and has a bad moment. And someone in your company can go to you and say, hey, I think I've just been harassed and I'd like to file a complaint. So outside, inside, that I think was an eye-opener a while ago when I was involved in this a little bit in my former life, that many people open their eyes and say, wow, even an outsider, I have the responsibility to be sure that I protect my people, even from outsiders.
Right. And that is actually a recent addition to the law as well. There was a bunch of additions made last fall. And the purpose of that is just they're in your purview. So you can't know everything, but the law is if you knew or should have known. So if you're hearing rumors or things like that, you do need to investigate and have a conversation with your employees. So just sticking your head in the sand and hoping it will go away is not a good strategy in this day and age.
Okay, kind of training. Could I get some PowerPoints and read up on this thing and as the owner of the business hold my own training?
No, you actually, this is actually in the code. You do need someone who's certified to do the training, either a certified trainer or an attorney who does know what they're doing.
Got to hire. So statistics on this prevalence, you know, I'd love to know what's going on. How badly are lawsuits or issues coming up?
I would think the biggest statistic that I always bring up in training is that 1 in 3 women have reported harassment in the workplace. And there was a survey completed called Project 10, and over 900 women were polled about their experiences in the workplace. And 65% reported unwanted sexual advances. 65% were assigned lower level tasks that their male colleagues weren't assigned, like handling mail or watering plants, things like that, even though their job definitely didn't call for that. And about 25% felt unsafe on the job. And I do want to let people know that even though it might be more male dominated in that only 24% of the automotive workforce is female, this harassment doesn't only apply to females or male to female. It can be anybody who is feeling uncomfortable or feeling that harassment. So I do want to make that distinction. But 50% of your customers might be females. So I think that's something that we really have to take a look at. And as a female, I don't want to go somewhere where I'm going to have to be subjected to weird behavior that people might be exhibiting. So you can maybe pick up business from your competitor if you do have a nice environment that is respectful and clean and a woman isn't going to feel like she's being taken advantage of or hit on or gawked at. It's a business principle and core values as well.
Hey, Carm here. Now, you know I attend Apex in Las Vegas each year. It's my must-attend show for one simple reason. It keeps me up to date on everything in the global automotive aftermarket industry. At Apex, I see, touch, and compare the latest new tools and equipment in the industry. I learn how new technology is affecting independent repair shops. I sit in on advanced training sessions on underhood service and alternative fuel vehicles. And so important, I network with others facing the same opportunities and challenges. I know many of you are shop owners, managers, or technicians. I also know going to Apex means time away from your business. But I simply don't know how you can stay ahead of the huge transformation and changes taking place in the industry without attending Apex. Hey, make Apex your must-attend show. The dates are Tuesday, November 5th through Thursday, November 7th at the Sands Expo in Las Vegas. Registration? It's only $40, and it only takes a few minutes. Go to aapexshow.com. If I am a female customer and I go into a shop and I feel that I've had a harassment event, where do I go? Do I necessarily go to the owner of the shop? Do I go to a government agency? What do I do?
That is an interesting question, since it isn't so obvious. But I would say the first thing you could do is look to speak with the owner of the business. And ideally, they would take that time and investigate. But that doesn't always happen. Sometimes people hide out and don't want to be found. So another option would be to file a complaint with the EEOC or your local agency in your state.
It's amazing to think how hard we have to work to protect ourselves. But you know what? It goes back to the core value piece and the standards that your business have. So many businesses, this is not even, nothing's ever going to happen to them. And I think what we're trying to talk about here is protect yourself. Make sure in the meetings that you have with your team and your people and the standards and the values that you post and you believe in that is part of your culture, that you don't ignore the fact that this can happen. I think it needs to be discussed probably quarterly with the team so that they know how serious this issue can be. Do you make those recommendations?
Absolutely. So even if your state doesn't require the training, I just think it's a best practice and you just can't ignore it at this point in time. But if you want to get into the financial considerations, I can talk about a few cases there. I mean, in putting together my article, we have Ford Motor Company, we have Hyundai, we have PF Chang's, local winery. I mean, this just really affects not only media, where we have big people with $20 million contracts getting fired, but this trickles down to big Fortune 500 corporations and all the small ones as well. And so some of these can be $10 million lawsuits, or even if it's $100,000. I mean, I don't know any business owner that wants to spend their money on a lawsuit instead of their retirement or their children's education or bonuses or equipment for their employees. Nobody wants to spend money on a lawsuit. Not only that, it takes sometimes 2 years and all this time away from work to deal with it and do the discovery and go to depositions and trials. And it can be at least $100,000 just for your own attorney's fees. And then if you lose, you have to pay the plaintiff's attorney's fees. So, I mean, it's astronomical and nobody can afford to be dealing with that. So that's really where the training comes in. But not only that, the managers need to be on top of it, need to be reporting it, getting things in writing and calling legal counsel so that you can nip this in the bud. I would say the ones with the bigger judgments, financial judgments, are because they didn't nip it in the bud. They had retaliation. They kind of supported this manager who was doing things they shouldn't have, you know, took people off of jobs, sent them away to far flung stores and things like that. And so really that sends a message, we don't care about you. And so then the jury or the government would say, well, we can't have that. And now we're going to fine you even punitive damages.
I bet you when you get to the retaliation piece in your training, you spend some time there.
Yes. And so the point of that is that a lot of the times, the reasons why people aren't reporting these things, and if we look at the Harvey Weinstein case that went on back since at least the 80s, people didn't bring it up because they threatened this will ruin your career, or people don't want to be looked down on or not part of the team or not believed. So there's a lot of reasons people don't report it, but retaliation is probably the number one, and it actually is real. People get reassigned or fired or demoted for doing these things. Even in one of the articles I read, a woman brought it to her labor organization and they said, oh, well, but we might ruin that guy's career. Let's really rethink this. So it is very real. And so it's also illegal under the law as well.
You said something just a few minutes ago about win-lose. If you lose, you pay not only your attorney, but the plaintiff's attorney. How much lose is there out there? Are there any people winning their cases?
Probably not, because I mean, I think in my own experience, I have never even been to trial because we always settle our cases. And so in some ways, the fact that someone brings a case at all, you already lose, even if it didn't happen or you're innocent, just because you have to pay to get out of it. And you're probably going to have to pay something to settle the case.
Wow. Is there any insurance that can be purchased to cover this?
EPLI insurance, which is employment insurance. There's two types. There's one that would cover discrimination and harassment, and then there's another one that's additional cost that covers labor claims. So that's actually a great question. I really recommend you call your insurance agent and see if you can purchase that. And then aside from actual insurance, I would say the next best thing you could do is do the training. Have good documentation, do a full investigation. You can even call in an outside third party to do an investigation and just really figure this out ahead of time so that we don't get to the point of a lawsuit or a claim. And then one other piece of advice is if it does result in a termination, a severance agreement may also be a good idea. And so in exchange for an amount of money that you're giving them, they would agree to waive their right to bring a lawsuit or a case against you. So that's always another item to have in your toolbox. And then you may also want an arbitration clause. I give that to my clients sometimes at the same time as the training, and that is to keep any case out of the court and with a private arbitrator. So there are a few things you can do to protect yourself.
Complicated, ugly. I'm just trying to come up with some words that could be this terrible, deep, downward spiral hole that we could get ourselves into because we're not paying attention to the law. But we're also not paying attention to just running good business and making sure that we're hiring right, we're firing on time, and that we respect our customer and the people who engage with our business. And that you have a, if you will, a non-negotiation policy of harassment. It just will not happen inside of my business. And I think it's got to start at the top.
That's also important. You do have to have your owner and your manager at the training. They can't say, oh, I'm too busy doing something, I don't need to be there, because usually they're going to be the one that's involved, or they're the ones receiving the complaint. So they absolutely know how to handle this and what to do. They have to know all of these things.
I love to listen to lawyers when I've gone to seminars, and you know, when they got to the part where they said, well, there's a great example of a case that I had, and they wouldn't mention any names, and you'd sit there and you'd think about that. You've got any things that you could share with us, any special cases that motivate us to be sure that we're doing all the right things?
Sure. So the one at Ford Motor Company, there were about a dozen women who reported complaints, and they were over a period of time, again, because of that retaliation. And one person, a woman was having trouble getting childcare. And so the manager said, oh, if you come over on your day off, I can help you. And so they ended up having sex, and she ended up feeling bad about it, but she didn't get in trouble for being late anymore. So that was just kind of one anecdote within that. But others that I saw, even in a restaurant case where managers would blow kisses, lick lips, simulate sex with kitchen tools or tell people, you know, you're going to like this or propose sexual relations with them. And then if they didn't, then they would send them to a store in a different county or take them off the schedule or demote them and fire them. So kind of all of these, I see common threads, whatever industry they are. And I do think auto industry, as I mentioned in the survey, was one of the highest of all the industries that they surveyed where women felt uncomfortable or threatened in the workplace. And so that comes all the way down to even having sexy calendars, you know, posted in the office or checking out girls when they're at the gas station across the street, things like that.
The sexy calendar thing is something that I hope went out in the 90s. But I think it's great that you bring it up. So many of our vendors were creating these sexy calendars and they were being posted typically mainstream inside the lunchroom or, you know, on the wall. And then they slowly gravitated to the side of the toolboxes so that they maybe weren't as mainstream. And then finally, the right thing to do was to completely remove them. And so thanks for bringing that up. But let me ask you a question about the individual that you just described, you know, that this whole Ford Motor thing, and how would a manager do and say the things that he did if he had gone through this training? I mean, my point is that if we train someone, Jennifer, they still may go bad on us.
Okay, so that even happens to this day. I have friends that are lawyers and they work at big law firms, and there's someone who's a partner and not only does what you could consider abusive or hostile environment by yelling and demeaning, but people know about it. HR knows about it, and it's shocking to me as an employment lawyer knowing that they're a law firm. But I think a lot of times if that person has clout or money or clients, or they've been doing it for a period of time, or they're old school, or they come from a different generation where this is more acceptable, allegedly, like, these things go on. So it really comes down to you saying, what is bringing more value or more pain to the company, keeping this person around who brings in business, or if I have a multi-million-dollar lawsuit, is he gone and he's out of here? So that is kind of a risk tolerance that the company is going to have to take.
I wrote the word risk down as you were telling me this. And of course, you finished off with risk tolerant. Interesting. Will we ever get a chance to wipe this out and just be sure that nothing like this happens inside of the workplace, do you think?
I mean, I do think some of this is human nature and it's gone on. But I do think we have the ability to learn and improve and be conscious and be aware of our behaviors and how they affect others. So part of my training, I reference a video from Dolly Parton's movie 9 to 5 from the 80s. Or if you watch Mad Men, you can watch it and say, that's completely shocking. I can't believe people spoke that way. And so while these things do continue to persist, I do think the volume of these things and the daily pervasiveness may be dissipating. Not to say that it is everywhere, but I do think we are making some strides and just kind of really right now, just being more conscious of how we are and how we treat others. And that doesn't only go to harassment. That just goes to every aspect of a business and a culture. And at the end of the day, if you're the owner and it's your business, that comes from you. You can write up a core value sheet and take people out to lunch and talk about it. So you don't have to put up with this, and you get to hire your team. And so you can hand pick people that share your values and have integrity and want to do a good business and serve your clients and have them feel comfortable and excited and leave you good reviews. So all of that is somewhat in your hands. And if somebody is cursing a lot, and I've heard that's a big issue in the industry, you can discipline them. You can get rid of them. You can have a curse jar to encourage better way of speaking. So I do think a lot of the responsibility does fall on us as owners.
9 to 5, that whole thing could be a training piece. The whole movie could be training. And you know, and every time I would see 9 to 5 again, and probably, I don't know, once a year it may show up on the older TV channels and stuff, I looked at that and I says, it would absolutely, positively never happen today. Now, I know I'm wrong in saying that, but I think we've come a long way from the stuff that happened in 9 to 5. What about dating in the workplace, Jennifer? It's got to be an issue.
So that's always an interesting topic. And I like to bring that up in training as a question. What do you all think about dating in the workplace? Because I always get different answers. The majority of people at least act like, oh no, that's terrible. But some have said, oh, it's great. We could carpool to lunch and have lunch together. So I always like to poll the room, especially with HR in there, to see who's responding to that. But the reason that it's important, in a poll that I've read, nearly half of the respondents know a coworker who's had an affair at work or while on a business trip. And 20% of respondents themselves have had an office affair. Most of these can start as a hookup. A lot of them start when there's alcohol involved, either at a holiday party or a happy hour, or if you're away at a conference. So it's very real. I mean, some people do meet their soulmate and get married to a work partner, but a lot of times it's more destructive to the business. Now, why? There's many reasons why. First of all, if you've ever dated someone and you've broken up, you don't want to see them every day. And now they're at work and you have to see them on your way to the restroom or the water cooler. You may have friends at work and now they have to take sides, or you may be having an argument and now you're distracted and you can't focus. And there's also possibilities that it started as a consensual relationship and now someone's going to bring an actual or false claim against you for harassment. So there's just so many ways this can go awry. And so usually companies' policies are that it's prohibited to have a relationship between a superior and a subordinate. And that's for obvious reasons, because they can hold things over you. And that's where we get into quid pro quo harassment, which is one of the three types. And that's where if you do this, I'll give you this reward. Or if you don't do that, I will take something away or cause you some punishment. And so then amongst peers, it's discouraged for the reasons that I mentioned. Yes.
That piece you just covered on is huge. And I think we all have to take heed on that. Hey, listen, I would love you to come back and let's do another episode on hiring and firing, because I learned so much with this one, and I'm sure you can do just wonderful in that department. So what's the next steps? What should we be thinking about and doing regarding harassment?
Sure. So in terms of harassment, there's a few things you could do. One would be to schedule that training, and that would either be with a live person like myself to come to your shop and do an in-person training. And in California, at least it's 1 hour for all employees once every 2 years. And then for supervisors, they get a second hour, and that's within 6 months of hire or promotion. And that's where I do a one-on-one live practice with them, because they have additional responsibilities that they have that are, if they are brought a complaint, they have to investigate. Even if somebody says, oh, no, I just want to let you know, but please don't do anything. You do have responsibilities, and not everybody knows how to do that. So we work through that a little bit more. And then you can also look online to see if there's any training that you can pay, you know, depending on your budget and when people are available. The way that we did it is to close the shop down during lunch. You're going to have somebody still dealing with customers, but, you know, bringing in pizza, doing the training. And then we went offsite with the managers and had this one-on-one training. Also, you want to get that anti-harassment policy. So that is going to be a written summary, basically, of the training. So you put that in the file. And then having this open door policy and letting people know that you can come to us. We won't retaliate against you. We do want to investigate, and we do want to stop it before it happens. So the number one way that I say to prevent harassment is first let the harasser know. Just say, this isn't working, please be respectful, don't do this. And then if they say no, then great, hopefully we've avoided a situation. But if they either don't respond or the person is uncomfortable and doesn't want to tell them, then they would take the next step, and that's to go to their manager or the owner and make a complaint.
And have a witness with you if you're the owner.
I mean, you may not have the opportunity for that because you might not yet know what it's about. They may just say, hey, I want to talk about something in private with you. So I do recommend if anyone brings that cue that you go somewhere that's either nearby or in an office, if you have one, somewhere quiet where you're not interrupted, turn off the cell phone. There's nothing worse than telling someone something very intimate and private and them being distracted. And so then I recommend, I always give my clients an investigation report, and it has a list of questions that you can ask so that you don't miss anything in the moment. And then you can type up a report, and then you can have the witness or complainant say, yes, that's my understanding, or they can send you a written statement, and then you would investigate, confidentially and then speak with anybody else who's either the alleged harasser or another witness, and then you'd conduct that investigation.
Okay, so before I go out and look for training, I've got to have my ducks in order anyway. I've got to have my policy in place. I've got to have my signatures done. I mean, this isn't about presenting the harassment policy. This is really about training how to prevent it in the workplace. Am I right?
Right. So probably your trainer, whether it's from something like an HR organization or a lawyer, they might be probably creating those policies for you. So this may be all done at the same time. As I mentioned, I pass mine out while we're the day of the training. That way we know that we're going to get the signatures back. But yes, part of it's prevention. And then the other part is knowing what to do when it happens.
I know that there's an awful lot of shop owners that are reaching out to HR companies to work with them and to help them. And they are probably also very much on point with the local laws and getting this to happen. You said something a few minutes ago, Jennifer, once every 2 years. Does this have to be refreshed every 2 years?
At least in California. And then the blog that I have will tell you by state. So I think some were once a year. So definitely. And the reason for that is there's not only employee turnover and new employees that haven't had the training, but people forget. And so it's always, or the law changes and it's updated. So that's why it's so frequent.
It reminds me of insurance.
Again, yes.
It does. Insurance, you don't have to, well, yeah, you do have to pay for the training, but it's almost insurance in your pocket. The GradyFirm.com, GradyFirm.com is your website. We'll put the any information that anyone in California would like to get a hold of you. And hopefully we've encouraged the rest of the country to pay attention and to get in touch with someone. And would you come back and do a little segment with us on hiring and firing?
Absolutely. I can't wait. And if you want to collect any questions, then we can address those for your viewers next time.
Jennifer Grady, the Grady Firm from Beverly Hills, California. Thanks for being here, Jennifer.
Thank you so much for having me.
Thanks for being on board to listen and learn from the premier automotive aftermarket podcast. Until next time.